creates a mind with a will too strong to be erased, an anomaly localized on this planet. I had never seen the ugliness of treating an unconquerable spirit as a defect as clearly as I did now, looking into Ian's eyes.
"And if they caught you?" he asked.
"If they realized who I was? If anyone is still looking for me?" I thought of my seeker and shuddered as he had. "They would take me out and put me in another host. Someone young, tractable. They would hope that I would be able to be myself again. Maybe they would ship me off-planet, get me away from the bad influences."
"Would you be yourself again?"
I met his gaze. "I am myself. I haven't lost myself to Melanie. I would feel the same as I do now, even as a bear or a flower."
"They wouldn't discard you?"
"Not a soul. We have no capital punishment for our kind. Or any punishment, really. Whatever they did, it would be to save me. I used to think there was no need for any other way, but now I have myself as proof against that theory. It would probably be right to discard me. I'm a traitor, aren't I?"
Ian pursed his lips. "More of an expatriate, I'd say. You haven't turned on them. You've just left their society."
We were quiet again. I wanted to believe what he said was true. I considered the word expatriate, trying to convince myself that I was nothing worse. Ian exhaled loudly enough to make me jump.
"When Doc sobers up, we'll get him to take a look at your face."
He reached over and put his hand under my chin. This time I didn't flinch. He turned my head to the side so he could examine the wound. "It's not important. I'm sure it looks worse than it is."
"I hope so. It looks awful."
He sighed and then stretched.
"I suppose we've hidden long enough that Kyle's clean and unconscious. Want some help with the dishes?"
Ian wouldn't let me wash the dishes in the stream the way I usually did. He insisted that we go into the black bathing room, where I would be invisible. I scrubbed dishes in the shallow end of the dark pool while he cleaned off the filth left behind by his mystery labors. Then he helped me with the last of the dirty bowls. When we were done, he escorted me back to the kitchen, which was starting to fill up with the lunch crowd. More perishables were on the menu. Soft white bread slices, slabs of sharp cheddar cheese, circles of lush pink bologna. People were scarfing down the delicacies with abandon, though the despair was still perceptible in the slump of their shoulders, in the absence of smiles or laughter. Jamie was waiting for me at our usual counter. Two double stacks of sandwiches sat in front of him, but he wasn't eating. His arms were folded as he waited for me. Ian eyed his expression curiously, but left to get his own food without asking. I rolled my eyes at Jamie's stubbornness and took a bite. Jamie dug in as soon as I was chewing. Ian was back quickly, and we all ate in silence. The food tasted so good, it was hard to imagine a reason for conversation, or anything else that would empty our mouths. I stopped at two, but Jamie and Ian ate until they were groaning in pain. Ian looked as though he was about to collapse. His eyes struggled to stay open.
"Get back to school, kid," he said to Jamie.
Jamie appraised him.
"Maybe I should take over."
"Go to school," I told him quickly. I wanted Jamie a safe distance from me today.
"I'll see you later, okay? Don't worry about anything."
"Sure." A one-word lie wasn't quite so obvious. Or maybe I was just being sarcastic again. Once Jamie was gone, I turned on the somnolent Ian. "Go get some rest. I'll be fine. I'll stay someplace inconspicuous. Middle of a cornfield or something."
"Where did you sleep last night?"
he asked, his eyes surprisingly sharp under his half-closed lids. "Why?"
"I can sleep there now, and you can be inconspicuous beside me."
We were just murmuring, barely over a whisper now. No one paid us any attention.
You can't watch me every second.
Wanna bet?
I shrugged, giving up. I was back at the hole, where I was kept in the beginning.
Ian frowned. He didn't like that. But he got up and led the way back to the storage corridor. The main plaza was busy again now, full of people moving around the garden, all of them grave, their eyes on their feet. When we were alone in the black tunnel, I tried to reason with him again.
Ian, what's the point of this? Won't it hurt Jamie more the longer I'm alive? In the end, wouldn't it be better for him if...
Don't think like that, Wanda.
We're not animals. Your death is not an inevitability.
I don't think you're an animal, I said quietly.
Thanks. I didn't say that as an accusation, though. I wouldn't blame you if you did.
That was the end of our conversation. That was the moment we both saw the pale blue light reflecting dimly from around the next turn in the tunnel.
Shh, Ian breathed. Wait here.
He pressed my shoulder down gently, trying to stick me where I stood. Then he strode forward, making no attempt to hide the sound of his footsteps. He disappeared around the corner.
Jared?
I heard him say, feigning surprise. My heart felt heavy in my chest. The sensation was more pain than fear.
I know it's with you, Jared answered.
He raised his voice, so that anyone between here and the main plaza would hear.
Come out, wherever you are, he called,
his voice hard and mocking.
Chapter 29
Betrayed. Maybe I should have run the other way, but no one was holding me back now, and though his voice was cold and angry, Jared was calling to me. Melanie was even more eager than I was as I stepped carefully around the corner and into the blue light. I hesitated there. Ian stood just a few feet ahead of me, poised on the balls of his feet, ready for whatever hostile movement Jared might make toward me. Jared sat on the ground, on one of the mats Jamie and I had left here. He looked as weary as Ian, though his eyes, too, were more alert than the rest of his exhausted posture.
At ease. Jared said to Ian. I just want to talk to it. I promised the kid and I'll stand by that promise.
Where's Kyle? Ian demanded.
Snoring. Your cave might shake apart from the vibrations.
Ian didn't move.
I'm not lying, Ian. And I'm not going to kill it. Jeb is right. No matter how messed up this stupid situation is, Jamie has as much say as I do, and he's been totally suckered, so I doubt he'll be giving me the go-ahead any time soon. No one's been suckered, Ian growled.
Jared waved his hand, dismissing the disagreement over terminology.
It's not in any danger from me, is my point.
For the first time he looked at me, evaluating the way I hugged the far wall, watching my hands tremble.
I won't hurt you again, he said to me.
I took a small step forward.
You don't have to talk to him if you don't want to, Wanda, Ian said quickly. This isn't a duty or a chore to be done. It's not mandatory. You have a choice.
Jared's eyebrows pulled low over his eyes. Ian's words confused him. No, I whispered. I'll talk to him. I took another short step. Jared turned his hand palm up and curled his fingers twice, encouraging me forward. I walked slowly, each step an individual movement followed by a pause, not part of a steady advance. I stopped a yard away from him. Ian shadowed each step, keeping close to my side.
I'd like to talk to it alone, if you don't mind, Jared said to him.
Ian planted himself.
I do mind.
No, Ian, it's okay. Go get some sleep. I'll be fine.
I nudged his arm lightly.
Ian scrutinized my face, his expression dubious.
This isn't some death wish? Sparing the kid? He demanded.
No. Jared wouldn't lie to Jamie about this.
Jared scowled when I said his name, the sound of it full of confidence.
"Please, Ian," I pleaded. "I want to talk to him."
Ian looked at me for a long minute, then turned to scowl at Jared. He barked out each sentence like an order. "Her name is Wanda, not it. You will not touch her. Any mark you leave on her, I will double on your worthless hide."
I winced at the threat.
Ian turned abruptly and stalked into the darkness. It was silent for a moment as we both watched the empty space where he had disappeared. I looked at Jared's face first, while he still stared after Ian. When he turned to meet my gaze, I dropped my eyes.
"Wow. He's not kidding, is he?" Jared said.
I treated that as a rhetorical question.
"Why don't you have a seat?"
he asked me, patting the mat beside him. I deliberated for a moment, then went to sit against the same wall but close to the hole, putting the length of the mat between us. Melanie didn't like this. She wanted to be near him, for me to smell his scent and feel the warmth of his body beside me. I did not want that. And it wasn't because I was afraid he would hurt me. He didn't look angry at the moment, only tired and wary. I just didn't want to be any closer to him. Something in my chest was hurting to have him so near, to have him hating me in such close proximity. He watched me, his head tilted to the side. I could only meet his gaze fleetingly before I had to look away.
"I'm sorry about last night. About your face. I shouldn't have done that."
I stared at my hands, knotted together in a double fist on my lap.
"You don't have to be afraid of me."
I nodded, not looking at him. He grunted.
"Thought you said you would talk to me?"
I shrugged. I couldn't find my voice with the weight of his antagonism in the air between us. I heard him move. He scooted down the mat until he sat right beside me, the way Melanie had hoped for. Too close. It was hard to think straight, hard to breathe right, but I couldn't bring myself to scoot away. Oddly, for this was what she'd wanted in the first place, Melanie was suddenly irritated. "What?" I asked, startled by the intensity of her emotion. "I don't like him next to you. It doesn't feel right. I don't like the way you want him there." For the first time since we'd abandoned civilization together, I felt waves of hostility emanating from her. I was shocked. That was hardly fair.
"I just have one question," Jared said, interrupting us.
I met his gaze and then shied away, recoiling both from his hard eyes and from Melanie's resentment.
"You can probably guess what it is. Jeb and Jamie spent all night jabbering at me."
I waited for the question, staring across the dark hall at the rice bag, last night's pillow. In my peripheral vision, I saw his hand come up, and I cringed into the wall.
"I'm not going to hurt you," he said again, impatient, and cupped my chin in his rough hand, pulling my face around so I had to look at him.
My heart stuttered when he touched me, and there was suddenly too much moisture in my eyes. I blinked, trying to clear them.
"Wanda,"
he said my name slowly. Unwillingly, I could tell, though his voice was even and toneless.
"Is Melanie still alive? Still part of you? Tell me the truth."
Melanie attacked with the brute strength of a wrecking ball. It was physically painful, like the sudden stab of a migraine headache where she tried to force her way out.
"Stop it! Can't you see?"
It was so obvious in the set of his lips, the tight lines under his eyes. It didn't matter what I said or what she said.
"I'm already a liar to him," I told her. "He doesn't want the truth. He's just looking for evidence, some way to prove me a liar, a seeker to Jeb and Jamie so that he'll be allowed to kill me."
Melanie refused to answer or believe me. It was a struggle to keep her silent. Jared watched the sweat bead on my forehead, the strange shiver that shook down my spine, and his eyes narrowed. He held on to my chin, refusing to let me hide my face.
"Jared, I love you!" she tried to scream. "I'm right here!" My lips didn't quiver, but I was surprised that he couldn't read the words spelled out plainly in my eyes. Time passed slowly while he waited for my answer. It was agonizing, having to stare into his eyes, having to see the revulsion there. As if that wasn't enough, Melanie's anger continued to slice at me from the inside. Her jealousy swelled into a bitter flood that washed through my body and left it polluted. More time passed, and the tears welled up until they couldn't be contained in my eyes anymore. They spilled over onto my cheeks and rolled silently into Jared's palm. His expression didn't change. Finally, I'd had enough. I closed my eyes and jerked my head down. Rather than hurt me, he dropped his hand. He sighed, frustrated. I expected he would leave. I stared at my hands again, waiting for that. My heartbeat marked the passing minutes. He didn't move. I didn't move. He seemed carved out of stone beside me. It fit him, this stone-like stillness. It fit his new, hard expression, the flint in his eyes. Melanie pondered this Jared, comparing him with the man he used to be. She remembered an unremarkable day on the run.
"Ah!"
Jared and Jamie groaned together. Jared lounges on the leather sofa, and Jamie sprawls on the carpet in front of him. They're watching a basketball game on the big screen TV. The parasites who live in this house are at work, and we've already filled the Jeep with all it can hold. We have hours to rest before we need to disappear again. On the TV, two players are disagreeing politely on the sideline. The cameraman is close. We can hear what they're saying.
"I believe I was the last one to touch it. It's your ball."
"I'm not sure about that.
I wouldn't want to take any unfair advantage. We'd better have the refs review the tape."
The players shake hands, pat each other's shoulders.
"This is ridiculous," Jared grumbles. "I can't stand it," Jamie agrees, mirroring Jared's tone perfectly.
He sounds more like Jared every day, one of the many forms his hero worship has taken.
"Is there anything else on?"
Jared flips through a few channels until he finds a track and field meet. The parasites are holding the Olympics in Haiti right now. From what we can see, the aliens are all hugely excited about it. Lots of them have Olympic flags outside their houses. It's not the same, though. Everyone who participates gets a medal now. Pathetic. But they can't really screw up the 100-meter dash. Individual parasite sports are much more entertaining than when they try to compete against each other directly. They perform better in separate lanes.
"Mel, come relax," Jared calls.
I stand by the back door out of habit, not because I'm tense to run, not because I'm frightened. Empty habit, nothing more. I go to Jared. He pulls me onto his lap and tucks my head under his chin.
"Comfortable?" he asks.
"Yes," I say, because I really, truly am entirely comfortable. Here, in an alien's house. Dad used to say lots of funny things, like he was speaking his own language sometimes. 23 Skidoo, Salad Days, Nosy Parker, Bandbox Fresh, The Catbird's Seat, Chocolate Teapot, and something about Grandma sucking eggs. One of his favorites was Safe as Houses. Teaching me to ride a bike, my mother worrying in the doorway.
"Calm down, Linda. This street is safe as houses."
Convincing Jamie to sleep without his nightlight.
"It's safe as houses in here, son. Not a monster for miles."
Then overnight the word turned into a hideous nightmare, and the phrase became a black joke to Jamie and me. Houses were the most dangerous places we knew. Hiding in a patch of scrubby pines, watching a car pull out from the garage of a secluded home, deciding whether to make a food run, whether it was too dicey. "Do you think the parasites will be gone for long?" "No way. That place is safe as houses. Let's get out of here." And now I can sit here and watch TV like it is 5 years ago, and Mom and Dad are in the other room, and I've never spent a night hiding in a drainpipe with Jamie and a bunch of rats while body snatchers with spotlights search for the thieves who made off with a bag of dried beans and a bowl of cold spaghetti. I know that if Jamie and I survived alone for 20 years, we would never find this feeling on our own. The feeling of safety. More than safety, even. Happiness. Safe and happy. Two things I thought I'd never feel again. Jared makes us feel that way without trying. Just by being Jared. I breathe in the scent of his skin and feel the warmth of his body under mine. Jared makes everything safe. Everything happy. Even houses. He still makes me feel safe, Melanie realized, feeling the warmth where his arm was just half an inch from mine. Though he doesn't even know I'm here. I didn't feel safe. Loving Jared made me feel less safe than anything else I could think of. I wondered if Melanie and I would have loved Jared if he'd always been who he was now, rather than the smiling Jared in our memories, the one who had come to Melanie with his hands full of hope and miracles. Would she have followed him if he'd always been so hard and cynical? If the loss of his laughing father and wild big brothers had iced him over the way nothing but Melanie's loss had? Of course, Mel was certain. I would love Jared in any form. Even like this, he belongs with me. I wondered if the same held true for me. Would I love him now if he were like this in her memory? Then I was interrupted. Without any cue that I perceived, suddenly Jared was talking, speaking as if we were in the middle of a conversation.
And so, because of you, Jeb and Jamie are convinced that it's possible to continue some kind of awareness after being caught. They're both sure Mel's still kicking in there.
He rapped his fist lightly against my head. I flinched away from him and he folded his arms.
Jamie thinks she's talking to him.
He rolled his eyes.
Not really fair to play the kid like that, but that's assuming a sense of ethics that clearly does not apply.
I wrap my arms around myself.
Jeb does have a point, though. That's what's killing me. What are you after? The Seeker's search wasn't well directed or even suspicious. They only seemed to be looking for you, not for us. So maybe they didn't know what you were up to. Maybe you're freelancing? Some kind of undercover thing. Or...
It was easier to ignore him when he was speculating so foolishly. I focused on my knees. They were dirty as usual, purple and black.
Maybe they're right. About the killing you part, anyway.
Unexpectedly, his fingers brushed lightly once across the goosebumps his words had raised on my arm. His voice was softer when he spoke again.
Nobody's going to hurt you now. As long as you aren't causing any trouble.
He shrugged.
I can sort of see their point. And maybe in a sick way it would be wrong, like they say. Maybe there is no justifiable reason to... Except that Jamie...
My head flipped up. His eyes were sharp, scrutinizing my reaction. I repented showing interest and watched my knees again.
It scares me how attached he's getting, Jared muttered. Shouldn't have left him behind. I never imagined. And I don't know what to do about it now. He thinks Mel's alive in there. What will it do to him when...
I noticed how he said when, not if. No matter what promises he'd made, he didn't see me lasting in the long term.
I'm surprised you got to Jeb, he reflected, changing the subject. He's a canny old guy. He sees through deception so easily. Till now.
He thought about that for a minute.
Not much for conversation, are you?
There was another long silence. His words came in a sudden gush.
The part that keeps bugging me is what if they're right? How the hell would I know?
I hate the way their logic makes sense to me. There's got to be another explanation. Melanie struggled again to speak. Not as viciously as before, this time without hope of breaking through. I kept my arms and lips locked. Jared moved, shifting away from the wall so that his body was turned toward me. I watched the movement from the corner of my eye.
"Why are you here?"
he whispered. I peeked up at his face. It was gentle, kind, almost the way Melanie remembered it. I felt my control slipping. My lips trembled. Keeping my arms locked took all my strength. I wanted to touch his face.
I wanted it.
Melanie did not like this.
"If you won't let me talk, then at least keep your hands to yourself," she hissed.
"I'm trying. I'm sorry."
I was sorry.
This was hurting her. We were both hurting, different hurts. It was hard to know who had it worse at the moment. Jared watched me curiously while my eyes filled again.
"Why?"
he asked softly.
"You know, Jeb has this crazy idea that you're here for me and Jamie. Isn't that nuts?"
My mouth half opened. I quickly bit down on my lip. Jared leaned forward slowly and took my face between both his hands. My eyes closed.
"Won't you tell me?"
My head shook once, fast. I wasn't sure who did it. Was it me saying won't or Melanie saying can't? His hands tightened under my jaw. I opened my eyes and his face was inches away from mine. My heart fluttered, my stomach dropped. I tried to breathe, but my lungs did not obey. I recognized the intention in his eyes. I knew how he would move, exactly how his lips would feel. And yet it was so new to me, a first more shocking than any other, as his mouth pressed against mine. I think he meant just to touch his lips to mine, to be soft. But things changed when our skin met. His mouth was abruptly hard and rough. His hands trapped my face to his while his lips moved mine in urgent, unfamiliar patterns. It was so different from remembering, so much stronger. My head swam incoherently. The body revolted. I was no longer in control of it. It was in control of me. It was not Melanie. The body was stronger than either of us now. Our breathing echoed loudly, mine wild and gasping, his fierce, almost a snarl. My arms broke free from my control. My left hand reached for his face, his hair, to wind my fingers in it. My right hand was faster, was not mine. Melanie's fist punched his jaw, knocked his face away from mine with a blunt, low sound. Flesh against flesh, hard and angry. The force of it was not enough to move him far, but he scrambled away from me the instant our lips were no longer connected, gaping with horror-struck eyes at my horror-struck expression. I stared down at the still-clenched fist, as repulsed as if I'd found a scorpion growing on the end of my arm. A gasp of revulsion choked its way out of my throat. I grabbed the right wrist with my left hand, desperate to keep Melanie from using my body for violence again. I glanced up at Jared. He was staring at the fist I restrained, too, the horror fading, surprise taking its place. In that second, his expression was entirely defenseless. I could easily read his thoughts as they moved across his unlocked face. This was not what he had expected, and he'd had expectations that was plain to see. This had been a test. A test he'd thought he was prepared to evaluate. A test with results he'd anticipated with confidence. But he'd been surprised. Did that mean pass or fail? The pain in my chest was not a surprise. I already knew that a breaking heart was more than an exaggeration. In a fight-or-flight situation, I never had a choice. It would always be flight for me. Because Jared was between me and the darkness of the tunnel exit, I wheeled and threw myself into the box-packed hole. The boxes crunched, crackled, and cracked as my weight shoved them into the wall, into the floor. I wriggled my way into the impossible space, twisting around the heavier squares and crushing the others. I felt his fingers scrape across my foot as he made a grab for my ankle, and I kicked one of the more solid boxes between us. He grunted, and despair wrapped choking hands around my throat. I hadn't meant to hurt him again. I hadn't meant to strike. I was only trying to escape. I didn't hear my own sobbing, loud as it was, until I could go no farther into the crowded hole, and the sound of my thrashing stopped. When I did hear myself, heard the ragged, tearing gasps of agony, I was mortified. So mortified. So humiliated. I was horrified at myself, at the violence I'd allowed to flow through my body, whether consciously or not. But that was not why I was sobbing. I was sobbing because it had been a test. And stupid, stupid, stupid emotional creature that I was, I wanted it to be real. Melanie was writhing in agony inside me, and it was hard to make sense of the double pain. I felt as though I was dying because it was not real. She felt as though she was dying because to her it had felt real enough. In all that she'd lost since the end of her world, so long ago, she'd never before felt betrayed. When her father had brought the Seekers after his children, she'd known it was not him. There was no betrayal, only grief. Her father was dead. But Jared was alive and himself. "No one's betrayed you, stupid," I railed at her. I wanted her pain to stop. It was too much, the extra burden of her agony. Mine was enough. "How could he? How?" she ranted, ignoring me. We sobbed beyond control. One word snapped us back from the edge of hysteria. From the mouth of the hole, Jared's low, rough voice, broken and strangely childlike, asked, "Mel?" Chapter 30. Abbreviated. "Mel?" he asked again, the hope he didn't want to feel coloring his tone. My breath caught in another sob, an aftershock.
"You know that was for you, Mel. You know that. Not for it. You know I wasn't kissing it."
My next sob was louder, a moan. Why couldn't I shut up? I tried holding my breath.
"If you're in there, Mel..."
He paused. Melanie hated the if. A sob burst up through my lungs and I gasped for air.
"I love you," Jared said. "Even if you're not there, if you can't hear me, I love you."
I held my breath again, biting my lip until it bled. The physical pain didn't distract me as much as I wished it would. It was silent outside the hole, and then silent inside, too, as I turned blue. I listened intently, concentrating only on what I could hear. I wouldn't think. There was no sound. I was twisted into the most impossible position. My head was the lowest point, the right side of my face pressed against the rough rock floor. My shoulders were slanted around a crumpled box edge, the right higher than the left. My hips angled the opposite way, with my left calf pressed to the ceiling. Pins and needles stabbed my legs and feet as feeling returned. Fighting with the boxes had left bruises. I could feel them forming. I knew I would have to find some way to explain to Ian and Jamie that I had done this to myself, but how? What should I say? How could I tell them that Jared had kissed me as a test, like giving a lab rat a jolt of electricity to observe its reaction? And how long was I supposed to hold this position? I didn't want to make any noise, but it felt like my spine was going to snap in a minute. The pain got more difficult to bear every second. I wouldn't be able to bear it in silence for long. Already a whimper was rising in my throat. Melanie had nothing to say to me. She was quietly working through her own relief and fury. Jared had spoken to her, finally recognized her existence. He had told her he loved her, but he had kissed me. She was trying to convince herself that there was no reason to be wounded by this, trying to believe all the solid reasons why this wasn't what it felt like, trying but not yet succeeding. I could hear all this, but it was directed internally. She wasn't speaking to me, in the juvenile, petty sense of the phrase. I was getting the cold shoulder. I felt an unfamiliar anger toward her, not like the beginning, when I feared her and wished for her eradication from my mind. No, I felt my own sense of betrayal now. How could she be angry with me for what had happened? How did that make sense? How was it my fault that I'd fallen in love because of the memories she forced on me and then been overthrown by this unruly body? I cared that she was suffering, yet my pain meant nothing to her. She enjoyed it. Vicious human. Tears, much weaker than the others, flowed down my cheeks in silence. Her hostility toward me simmered in my mind. Abruptly, the pain in my bruised, twisted back was too much. The straw on the camel. "Ugh," I grunted, pushing against stone and cardboard as I shoved myself backward. I didn't care about the noise anymore, I just wanted out. I swore to myself that I would never cross the threshold of this wretched pit again. Death first. Literally. It was harder to worm out than it had been to dive in. I wiggled and squirmed around until I felt like I was making things worse, bending myself into the shape of a lopsided pretzel. I started to cry again, like a child, afraid that I would never get free. Melanie sighed. "Hook your foot around the edge of the mouth and pull yourself out," she suggested. I ignored her, struggling to work my torso around a particularly pointy corner. It jabbed me just under the ribs. "Don't be petty," she grumbled. "That's rich, coming from you." "I know." She hesitated, then caved. "Okay, sorry, I am. Look, I'm human. It's hard to be fair sometimes. We don't always feel the right thing. Do the right thing." The resentment was still there, but she was trying to forgive and forget that I'd just made out with her true love. That's the way she thought of it, at least. I hooked my foot around the edge and yanked. My knee hit the floor, and I used that leverage to lift my ribs off the point. It was easier then to get my other foot out and yank again. Finally, my hands found the floor, and I shoved my way through, a breech berth, falling onto the dark green mat. I lay there for a moment, face down, breathing. I was sure at this point that Jared was long gone, but I didn't make certain of that right away. I just breathed in and out until I felt prepared to lift my head. I was alone. I tried to hold on to the relief and forget the sorrow this fact engendered. It was better to be alone, less humiliating. I curled up on the mat, pressing my face against the musty fabric. I wasn't sleepy, but I was tired. The crushing weight of Jared's rejection was so heavy it exhausted me. I closed my eyes and tried to think about things that wouldn't make my stinging eyes tear again. Anything but the appalled look on Jared's face when he'd broken away from me. What was Jamie doing now? Did he know I was here, or was he looking for me? Ian would be asleep for a long time, he'd looked so exhausted. Would Kyle wake soon? Would he come in search? Where was Jeb? I hadn't seen him all day. Was Doc really drinking himself unconscious? That seemed so unlike him. I woke slowly, roused by my growling stomach. I lay in the quiet darkness for a few minutes, trying to orient myself. Was it day or night? How long had I slept here alone? My stomach wouldn't be ignored for long, though, and I rolled up onto my knees. I must have slept for a while to be this hungry, missed a meal or two. I considered eating something from the supply pile in the hole. After all, I'd already damaged pretty much everything, maybe destroyed some. But that only made me feel guiltier about the idea of taking more. I'd go scavenge some rolls from the kitchen. I was feeling a little hurt on top of all the big hurt that I'd been down here so long without anyone coming to look for me. What a vain attitude. Why should anyone care what happened to me? So I was relieved and appeased to find Jamie sitting in the doorway to the big garden, his back turned on the human world behind him, unmistakably waiting for me. My eyes brightened, and so did his. He scrambled to his feet, relief washing over his features. "You're okay," he said. I wished he were right. He began to ramble.
I mean, I didn't think Jared was lying, but he said he thought you wanted to be alone, and Jeb said I couldn't go check on you and that I had to stay right here where he could see that I wasn't sneaking back there. But even though I didn't think you were hurt or anything, it was hard to not know for sure, you know?
I'm fine, I told him. But I held my arms out, seeking comfort. He threw his arms around my waist, and I was shocked to find that his head could rest on my shoulder while we stood.
Your eyes are red, he whispered. Was he mean to you?
No. After all, people weren't intentionally cruel to lab rats. They were just trying to get information.
Whatever you said to him, I think he believes us now. About Mel, I mean.
How does she feel?
She's glad about that.
He nodded, pleased.
How about you?
I hesitated, looking for a factual response. Telling the truth is easier for me than trying to hide it. My evasion seemed to answer the question enough to satisfy him. Behind him, the light in the garden was red and fading. The sun had already set on the desert. I'm hungry, I told him, and I pulled away from our hug.
I knew you would be. I saved you something good, I sighed.
Bread's fine.
Let it go, Wanda. Ian says you're too self-sacrificing for your own good. I made a face.
I think he's got a point, Jamie muttered.
Even if we all want you here, you don't belong until you decide you do.
I can't ever belong. And nobody really wants me here, Jamie.
I do.
I didn't fight with him, but he was wrong. Not lying, because he believed what he was saying. But what he really wanted was Melanie. He didn't separate us the way he should. Trudy and Heidi were baking rolls in the kitchen and sharing a bright green juicy apple. They took turns taking bites.
It's good to see you, Wanda, Trudy said sincerely, covering her mouth while she spoke because she was still chewing her last bite.
Heidi nodded in greeting, her teeth sunk in the apple. Jamie nudged me, trying to be inconspicuous about it, pointing out that people wanted me. He wasn't making allowances for common courtesy.
"Did you say for dinner?" he asked eagerly.
"Yep," Trudy said.
She bent down beside the oven and came back with a metal tray in her hand.
"Kept it warm. It's probably nasty and tough now, but it's better than the usual."
On the tray was a rather large piece of red meat. My mouth started to water, even as I rejected the portion I'd been allotted.
"It's too much."
"We have to eat all the perishables the first day," Jamie encouraged me. "Everyone eats themselves sick. It's a tradition."
"You need the protein," Trudy added. "We were on cave rations too long. I'm surprised no one's in worse shape."
I ate my protein while Jamie watched with hawk-like attention as each bite traveled from the tray to my mouth. I ate it all to please him, though it made my stomach ache to eat so much. The kitchen started to fill up again as I was finishing. A few had apples in their hands, all sharing with someone else. Curious eyes examined the sore side of my face.
"Why is everyone coming here now?" I muttered to Jamie.
It was black outside, the dinner hour long over. Jamie looked at me blankly for a second.
"To hear you teach."
His tone added the words, "Of course."
"Are you kidding me?
I told you nothing's changed."
I stared around the narrow room. It wasn't a full house. No Doc tonight, and none of the returned raiders, which meant no Paige either. No Jeb, no Ian, no Walter. A few others missing, Travis, Carol, Ruth Ann. But more than I would have thought, if I'd thought anyone would consider following the normal routine after such an abnormal day.
"Can we go back to the dolphins? Where we left off?" Wes asked,
interrupting my evaluation of the room. I could see that he'd taken it upon himself to start the ball rolling, rather than that he was vitally interested in the kinship circles of an alien planet. Everyone looked at me expectantly. Apparently life was not changing as much as I'd thought. I took a tray of rolls from Heidi's hands and turned to shove it into the stone oven. I started talking with my back still turned.
"So,
The third set of grandparents, they traditionally serve the community as they see it. On Earth, they would be the breadwinners, the ones who leave the home and bring back sustenance. They are farmers for the most part. They cultivate a plant-like growth that they milk for its sap. And life went on. Jamie tried to talk me out of sleeping in the supply corridor, but his attempt was half-hearted. There just wasn't another place for me. Stubborn as usual, he insisted on sharing my quarters. I imagined Jared didn't like that, but as I didn't see him that night or the next day, I couldn't verify my theory. It was awkward again, going about my usual chores, with the six raiders home, just like when Jeb had first forced me to join the community. Hostile stares, angry silences. It was harder for them than it was for me, though. I was used to it. They, on the other hand, were entirely unaccustomed to the way everyone else treated me. When I was helping with the corn harvest, for example, and Lily thanked me for a fresh basket with a smile, Andy's eyes bulged in their sockets at the exchange. Or when I was waiting for the bathing pool with Trudy and Heidi began playing with my hair. It was growing, always swinging in my eyes these days, and I was planning to shear it off again. Heidi was trying to find a style for me, flipping the strands this way and that. Brant and Aaron was the oldest man who'd gone on the long raid, someone I couldn't remember having seen before at all, came out and found us there, Trudy laughing at some silly atrocity Heidi was attempting to create atop my head, and both men turned a little green and stalked silently past us. Of course, little things like that were nothing. Kyle roamed the caves now, and though he was obviously under orders to leave me in peace, his expression made it clear that this restriction was repugnant to him. I was always with others when I crossed his path, and I wondered if that was the only reason he did nothing more than glower at me and unconsciously curl his thick fingers into claws. This brought back all the panic from my first weeks here, and I might have succumbed to it, begun hiding again, avoiding the common areas. But something more important than Kyle's murderous glares came to my attention that second night. The kitchen filled up again. I'm not sure how much was interest in my stories and how much was interest in the chocolate bars Jeb handed out. I declined mine, explaining to a disgruntled Jamie that I couldn't talk and chew at the same time. I suspected that he would save one for me, obstinate as ever. Ian was back in his usual hot seat by the fire, and Andy was there, eyes wary, beside Paige. None of the other raiders, including Jared, of course, were in attendance. Doc was not there, and I wondered if he was still drunk or perhaps hungover. And again, Walter was absent. Jeffrey, Trudy's husband, questioned me for the first time tonight. I was pleased, though I tried not to show it, that he seemed to have joined the ranks of the humans who tolerated me. But I couldn't answer his questions well, which was too bad. His questions were like Doc's. "I don't really know anything about healing," I admitted. "I never went to a healer after I first got here. I haven't been sick. All I know is that we wouldn't choose a planet unless we were able to maintain the host bodies perfectly. There's nothing that can't be healed, from a simple cut, a broken bone, to a disease. Old age is the only cause of death now. Even healthy human bodies were only designed to last for so long. And there are accidents, too, I guess. Though those don't happen as often with the souls. We're cautious."
"Armed humans aren't just an accident," someone muttered.
I was moving hot rolls. I didn't see who spoke, and I didn't recognize the voice. "Yes, that's true," I agreed evenly.
"So you don't know what they use to cure diseases, then?" Jeffrey pressed. "What's in their medications?"
I shook my head. "I'm sorry, I don't. It wasn't something I was interested in back when I had access to the information. I'm afraid I took it for granted. Good health is simply a given on every planet I've lived on."
Jeffrey's red cheeks flushed brighter than usual. He looked down, an angry set to his mouth.
What had I said to offend him?
Heath, sitting beside Geoffrey, patted his arm. There was a pregnant silence in the room.
About the vultures, Ian said.
The words were forced, a deliberate subject change.
I don't know if I missed this part sometime, but I don't remember you ever explaining about them being unkind.
It wasn't something I had explained, but I was pretty sure he wasn't really that interested. This was just the first question he'd been able to think of. My informal class ended earlier than usual. The questions were slow, and most of them supplied by Jamie and Ian. Geoffrey's questions had left everyone else preoccupied.
Well, we've got an early one tomorrow. Tearing down the stalks,
Jeb mused after yet another awkward silence, making the words a dismissal. People rose to their feet and stretched, talking in low voices that weren't casual enough.
What did I say? I whispered to Ian.
Nothing. They've got mortality on their minds.
He sighed. My human brain made one of those leaps in understanding that they called intuition.
Where's Walter?
I demanded, still whispering. Ian sighed again.
He's in the south wing. He's not doing well.
Why didn't anyone tell me?
Things have been difficult for you lately, so...
I shook my head impatiently at that consideration.
What's wrong with him?
Jamie was there beside me now. He took my hand.
Some of Walter's bones snapped. They're so brittle, he said in a hushed voice. Doc's sure it's cancer. Final stages, he says. Walt must have been keeping quiet about the pain for a long while now, Ian added somberly.
I winced. And there's nothing to be done?
Nothing at all?
Ian shook his head, keeping his brilliant eyes on mine.
Not for us. Even if we weren't stuck here, there would be no help for him now. We never cured that one.
I bit my lip against the suggestion I wanted to make. Of course there was nothing to do for Walter. Any of these humans would rather die slowly and in pain than trade their mind for their body's cure. I could understand that. Now...
He's been asking for you, Ian continued. Well, he says your name sometimes. It's hard to tell what he means. Doc's keeping him drunk to help with the pain.
Doc feels real bad about using so much of the alcohol himself, Jamie added. Bad timing all around. Can I see him? I asked. Or will that make the others unhappy?
Ian frowned and snorted. Wouldn't that be just like some people to get worked up over this?
He shook his head.
Who cares, though, right? If it's Walt's final wish?
Right, I agreed. The word final had my eyes burning. If seeing me is what Walter wants, then I guess it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks or if they get mad.
Don't worry about that. I'm not going to let anybody harass you.
Ian's white lips pressed into a thin line. I felt anxious, like I wanted to look at a clock. Time had ceased to mean much to me, but suddenly I felt the weight of a deadline. Is it too late to go tonight? Will we disturb him?
He's not sleeping regular hours. We can go see.
I started walking at once, dragging Jamie because he still gripped my hand. The sense of passing time, of endings and finality, propelled me forward. Ian caught up quickly, though, with his long stride. In the moonlit garden cavern we passed others who, for the most part, paid us no mind. I was too often in the company of Jamie and Ian to cause any curiosity, though we weren't headed for the usual tunnels. The one exception was Kyle. He froze mid-stride when he saw his brother beside me. His eyes flashed down to see Jamie's hand in mine, and then his lips twisted into a snarl. Ian squared his shoulders as he absorbed his brother's reaction. His mouth curled into a mirror of Kyle's, and he deliberately reached for my other hand, Kyle made a noise like he was about to be sick and turned his back on us. When we were in the blackness of the long tunnel south, I tried to free that hand. Ian gripped it tighter. I wish you wouldn't make him angrier, I muttered.
Kyle is wrong. Being wrong is sort of a habit with him. He'll take longer than anyone else to get over it, but that doesn't mean we should make allowances for him.
He frightens me, I admitted in a whisper. I don't want him to have more reasons to hate me. Ian and Jamie squeezed my hands at the same time. They spoke simultaneously.
Don't be afraid, Jamie said. Jeb's made his opinion very clear, Ian said.
What do you mean? I asked Ian.
If Kyle can't accept Jeb's rules, then he's no longer welcome here.
But that's wrong. Kyle belongs here.
Ian grunted. He's staying, so he'll just have to learn to deal.
We didn't talk again through the long walk. I was feeling guilty. It seemed to be a permanent emotional state here. Guilt and fear and heartbreak. Why had I come? Because you do belong here, oddly enough, Melanie whispered. She was very aware of the warmth of Ian's and Jamie's hands wrapped around and twined with mine. Where else have you ever had this? Nowhere, I confessed, feeling only more depressed. But it doesn't make me belong, not the way you do. We're a package deal, Wanda. As if I needed reminding. I was a little surprised to hear her so clearly. She'd been quiet the last 2 days, waiting, anxious, hoping to see Jared again. Of course, I'd been similarly occupied. Maybe he's with Walter. Maybe that's where he's been, Melanie thought hopefully. That's not why we're going to see Walter. No, of course not. Her tone was repentant, but I realized that Walter did not mean as much to her as he did to me. Naturally, she was sad that he was dying, but she had accepted that outcome from the beginning. I, on the other hand, could not bring myself to accept it even now. Walter was my friend, not hers. I was the one he'd defended. One of those dim blue lights greeted us as we approached the hospital wing. I knew now that the lanterns were solar-powered, left in sunny corners during the day to charge. We all moved more quietly, slowing at the same time without having to discuss it. I hated this room. In the darkness, with the odd shadows thrown by the weak glow, it seemed only more forbidding. There was a new smell. The room reeked of slow decay and stinging alcohol and bile. Two of the cots were occupied. Doc's feet hung over the edge of one. I recognized his light snore. On the other, looking hideously withered and misshapen, Walter watched us approach.
"Are you up for visitors, Walt?" Ian whispered, when Walter's eyes drifted in his direction.
Walter moaned. His lips drooped from his slack face, and his skin gleamed wetly in the low light. "Is there anything you need?" I murmured. I pulled my hands free. They fluttered helplessly in the air between me and Walter. His loosely rolling eyes searched the darkness. I took a step closer. "Is there anything we can do for you? Anything at all?" His eyes roamed till they found my face. Abruptly, they focused through the drunken stupor and the pain.
"Finally!" he gasped.
His breath wheezed and whistled.
"I knew you would come if I waited long enough. Oh, Gladys, I have so much to tell you."
Chapter 31 Needed.
I froze and then looked quickly over my shoulder to see if someone was behind me.
"Gladys was his wife," Jamie whispered almost silently. "She didn't escape."
"Gladys,"
Walter said to me, oblivious to my reaction.
"Would you believe I went and got cancer? What are the odds, eh? Never took a sick day in my life."
His voice faded out until I couldn't hear it.
but his lips continued to move. He was too weak to lift his hand. His fingers dragged themselves toward the edge of the cot, toward me. Ian nudged me forward. "What should I do?" I breathed. The sweat beading on my forehead had nothing to do with the humid heat.
"Grandfather lived to be 101,
Walter wheezed, audible again.
"Nobody ever had cancer in my family, not even the cousins. Didn't your Aunt Regan have skin cancer, though?"
He looked at me trustingly, waiting for an answer. Ian poked me in the back. I mumbled.
"Maybe that was Bill's aunt,"
Walter allowed. I shot a panicked glance at Ian, who shrugged. "Help," I mouthed at him. He motioned for me to take Walter's searching fingers. Walter's skin was chalk-white and translucent. I could see the faint pulse of blood in the blue veins on the back of his hand. I lifted his hand gingerly, worried about the slender bones that Jamie had said were so brittle. It felt too light, as if it were hollow.
"Ah, Gladie, it's been hard without you. It's a nice place here. You'll like it, even when I'm gone. Plenty of people to talk to. I know how you need to have your conversation."
The volume of his voice sank until I couldn't make out the words anymore, but his lips still shaped the words he wanted to share with his wife. His mouth kept moving, even when his eyes closed and his head lolled to the side. Ian found a wet cloth and began wiping Walter's shining face. "I'm not good at deception," I whispered, watching Walter's mumbling lips to make sure he wasn't listening to me. "I don't want to upset him."
"You don't have to say anything," Ian reassured me. "He's not lucid enough to care."
"Do I look like her?"
"Not a bit. I've seen her picture. Stocky redhead."
"Here, let me do that." Ian gave me the rag, and I cleaned the sweat off Walter's neck. Busy hands always make me feel more comfortable. Walter continued to mumble. I thought I heard him say,
"Thanks, Gladie. That's nice."
I didn't notice that Doc's snores had stopped. His familiar voice was suddenly there behind me, too gentle to startle.
"How is he?" "Delusional," Ian whispered. "Is that the brandy or the pain?"
"More the pain, I would think. I'd trade my right arm for some morphine."
"Maybe Jared will produce another miracle," Ian suggested.
"Maybe," Doc sighed.
I wiped absently at Walter's pallid face, listening more intently now, but they didn't speak of Jared again.
"Not here," Melanie whispered. "Looking for help for Walter,"
I agreed.
"Alone," she added.
I thought about the last time I'd seen him. The kiss. The belief.
He probably wanted some time to himself.
"I hope he isn't out there convincing himself that you're a very talented actress/seeker again."
"That's possible, of course."
Melanie groaned silently. Ian and Doc murmured in quiet voices about inconsequential things, mostly Ian catching Doc up on what was going on in the caves.
"What happened to Wanda's face?"
Doc whispered, but I could still hear him easily.
"More of the same,"
Ian said in a tight voice. Doc made an unhappy noise under his breath and then clicked his tongue. Ian told him a bit about tonight's awkward class, about Jeffrey's questions.
"It would have been convenient if Melanie had been possessed by a healer," Doc mused.
I flinched, but they were behind me and probably didn't notice.
"We're lucky it was Wanda," Ian murmured in my defense. "No one else..."
"I know," Doc interrupted, good-natured as always.
"I guess I should say it's too bad Wanda didn't have more of an interest in medicine."
"I'm sorry,"
I murmured. I was careless to reap the benefits of perfect health without ever being curious about the cause. A hand touched my shoulder.
"You have nothing to apologize for," Ian said.
Jamie was being very quiet. I looked around and saw that he was curled up on the cot where Doc had been napping.
"It's late," Doc noted. "Walter's not going anywhere tonight. You should get some sleep."
"We'll be back," Ian promised. "Let us know what we can bring, for either of you."
I laid Walter's hand down, patting it cautiously. His eyes snapped open, focusing with more awareness than before.
"Are you leaving?" he wheezed. "Do you have to go so soon?"
I took his hand again quickly. "No, I don't have to leave." He smiled and closed his eyes again. His fingers locked around mine with brittle strength. Ian sighed. "You can go," I told him. "I don't mind. Take Jamie back to his bed." Ian glanced around the room.
"Hold on a sec," he said.
And then he grabbed the cot closest to him. It wasn't heavy. He lifted it easily and slid it into place next to Walter's. I stretched my arm to the limit, trying not to jostle Walter so that Ian could arrange the cot.